Sports Day for Kia. The new Kia Niro electric SUV range has landed. And Red Energy, awarded Canstar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021. That's Red Energy.
7 minutes past six. Hello and welcome to Sports Day. Sam McClure and Jimmy Bartel with you. We are less than 6 hours of Melbourne finally coming out of this lockdown. More on that shortly. But on a serious note, the AFL and the Players Association have brought out their COVID-19 vaccination policy. And as I quote from the document, in general terms, the policy will require all AFL and AFLW players and football program staff to be vaccinated in advance of the start of the AFL and AFLW seasons. Now, there's a lot to this. They talk through it being a three-stage document. The first one essentially is the Victorian mandate, the first dose of October 22, fully vaccinated November 26. We here in Victoria know that mandate. The second stage mainly applies to the Sydney teams, the Swans and the Giants, first dose November 19, fully vaxxed by December 17. Then the third stage requires all other and remaining AFL players and staff of clubs in WA, SA and Queensland to receive a first dose by Jan 21 next year and be fully vaxxed by Feb 18 next year. Now, here's where it gets interesting. In between Feb 18 and May 18, clubs can then talk to players who don't want to get vaxxed, and they essentially have the power to transfer the player to the inactive list, to keep the player on the list and pay them basically a quarter of their wage or minimum wage, and they exercise any rights to terminate a player's contract. It is fairly strong. It is fairly clear. Now, you can disagree with this all you want. Well, one thing I will say, it's a hell of a lot clearer and much more concise than as we head out of lockdown tonight, knowing whether you actually can be at the pub at 12:01, but because of the curfew, can't be waiting out the front at 11:59. Have you ever heard of anything more crazy? Anyway, we digress. Jimmy Bartel is here. Welcome, James.
Thanks, Sam, and well explained too, because there's a fair bit to it, and there's obviously with any sort of legal-ish documents, there's a lot of language gymnastics that goes on with them. But yeah, I think you highlighted the key points too. And what a lot of it is doing is making a clear stance with some little bit of wiggle room for considerations for medical exemptions. But
which is the same as what it is for any other worker.
Yep. The Victorian authorised worker vaccination mandate. So
if you have a medical exemption,
it's in lockstep with that.
Yeah, it's in lockstep with that.
And the other point too is if a player decides not to, it's sort of a bit discretionary what the clubs will do to handle it.
Yep. The interesting comments from Paul Marsh, who's waiting online in the statement, he talks about the fact that they support the document. But in saying this, and I quote him, our view is that vaccinations are an individual decision. It has, however, come apparent in recent weeks that unvaccinated players will not be able to fulfil their contractual obligations due to various state border restrictions and the new work requirements in Victoria. Through our player meetings, players have been made aware that this was a possible scenario. Let's get to the man himself. Paul Marsh is the CEO, the Chief Executive of the Players Association. He joins us on Sports Day. Paul, welcome.
Yeah, good to chat, guys.
Paul, this is pretty significant, is it not?
Well, it's a pretty significant issue, and it's complex and it's difficult, and we've spent a little while working through it with the AFL, but I think where we've landed is a fair situation now, our position for the playing group, given the circumstances that we're dealing with.
Paul, was there pressure to get one out? We saw other sports, they've come out recently in the last week or so. We even spoke to Todd Greenberg, who represents another big players' union as well. Was there any public pressure? I know you don't look at that, but was there pressure to get something out?
A bit coming from you the other day, wasn't there, Jim? Everyone wants a bit of certainty at the moment, and I think what we've been able to build into this policy is some key dates depending on where each of the states are at. So clearly at the moment in Victoria, we've got AFLW players who are in their pre-season. We've got AFL players who are wanting to get into the clubs. We need to give them some certainty. We've got players around the country in similar positions. But in other states, at the moment, there's really no COVID. So we've been able to push back dates for first and second doses in the non-Victorian states, which we think is a really pragmatic outcome. We've also built in a clause here that if the government positions change, we have an ability to review this policy. So, whilst at the moment every player The expectation is that they'll get vaccinated by these dates. If things change, you know, we can change with it.
So on that, Paul, and you know, the ramifications for players that don't get vaccinated, I think are pretty extreme, and I'm not saying that in a good or bad sense. They can exercise any rights that the club may have to terminate a player's playing contract, but such rights are not to be exercised prior to the 18th of May. So that's really the cutoff date for when things can kick in. Given how full-on some of these sections of the contract around remuneration are you confident that compliance is going to be quite high? I mean, of course, you wouldn't have been able to get all 800 players on the phone in the last few weeks, but I can only gauge from this that the PA's got a fairly good sense that the vast majority of players are going to get vaxxed.
Yeah, I mean, we've met with all playing groups, male and female, over the last month or so. We've got a very good sense of it. I mean, I don't think I'd be stating this too highly to say that we're looking at probably 99% plus players that will be vaccinated. So, you know, practically, this is not a huge issue for the collective, but for the individuals that are, you know, working through these issues at the moment, clearly it's a big issue. And I think, you know, we've had to negotiate that with the AFL. I think we've landed in a fair position for all sides. But, you know, the players still have an opportunity to work through their own individual circumstances, which, you know, we continue to discuss with them.
I agree with all that, Paul. And as we read through it, it makes a lot of sense. And we make a lot of assumptions that pretty much everyone will take up, you know, the double vax. It says one line, clubs will determine the action to be taken with respect to, you know, payments, employment status. So is that putting it that each club can make their own decision, or will the players' union and the AFL still have an involvement if a player decides not to be double vaxxed?
Well, I think, you know, what we've put in place here is that every player will receive a payment of a minimum of 25% for the AFLW players, their contract. For the AFL male players, 25% of the minimum. But there's an opportunity for the club and the player then to negotiate that. And there'll be different circumstances. I mean, some players might be on multi-year contracts and clubs may want to keep them on their list and pay them at, you know, at full-toed odds. They're all the things that will be worked through. You know, clearly from a legal perspective, without going too far down that path, you know, we've taken advice here, and the player's position is not a particularly strong one. So, you know, I think, as I said, we've gone through what we think is a pragmatic outcome. The industry is supportive. You know, we are an industry, I think, that does support our people well. So I think, you know, there's an understanding here that there wouldn't be a player in the competition who doesn't want to play, and there are some circumstances here that are making it difficult for players to get vaccinated. So I think we're all doing our best to look after those players.
The legal issue that you just mentioned about the players not being in a strong position, I think that's a fascinating one for so many of our listeners, Paul. I mean, we can't use players' names, obviously, because that would be unfair. But if player XYZ, who's on a five-year deal and very well remunerated comparative to his teammates, decides, well, actually, I don't want to get vaccinated, and when I signed this multi-year deal with my club, there was nothing in the contract about this. It would be very interesting for a lawyer on his behalf to argue that case, I would think.
Yeah, and look, I don't want to get too much into the detail, and this isn't just a football issue. This is, you know, any worker in the current environment. It's a consideration here that we've worked through with the AFL in developing the policy.
And do you feel like this is just another example of footballers, whether they want to be or not, have to be, Jimmy, and you've been through this, they have to be at the forefront of this in social issues. Now, whether that's drink driving, whether that's drug use, whether it's some sort of other social issue.
Well, Tom McDonald's comments led the news. So that just proves that, that their opinion gets, you know, flows down.
But I mean, yeah, but so the governments, both federally Liberal government and the Labor government here in this state, have been very, very strong, as many other degrees of politics have been, on we've got to get vaxxed. So I think that puts Paul, the AFL, and, you know, consequently its players in that box, that whether they want to be or not, they kind of have to be industry leaders in this.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably a burden that that, you know, all high-profile people do carry. And I think our guys and girls carry that really well. You know, there are times where they can be a bit of a lightning rod, but, you know, we've got to accept that and move on. And, you know, this issue, as I said, it's been a complex one, and, you know, we're in a position now because of government directions, both in Victoria and the country, where, you know, there's really no choice on this one. But I think, you know, if I go back to the point I made before about the number of players that have willingly got vaccinated here, you know, we're well ahead of, you know, what we're seeing in community at the moment. So I'm really proud of what the our members have done on this particular topic. And, you know, we're certainly supportive of trying to get as many of the players vaccinated as possible.
Paul, your organisation does, as you said, it supports its players brilliantly. Have you had much consultation with the AFLW women's player who's decided not to be vaxxed and really is foregoing her AFLW career in that way?
Yeah, look, you know, Jimmy, we don't tend to talk about individual circumstances, but, you know, what I would say is that, you know, we're aware of players from around the competition. We've had lots of conversations with individual players, and, you know, we'll continue to support, you know, any player in this position.
Do you think, like, we saw Tom McDonald that Jimmy mentioned a couple of nights, Paul, and you would have seen those comments. He's double vaxxed, but he thinks it's wrong to mandate. Do you get a sense that there are more of those types in the amongst your constituents?
Yeah, I mean, like any issue, AFL players are just a subset of the community. So, you know, you go to a dinner party, which, you know, hopefully we can do from tomorrow.
Touch wood, yeah.
You'll probably get, you know, 10 people sitting around a table and there'll be two or three that will have that view. So our players are no different in that sense. And, you know, I think it's really healthy that we have players that are willing to speak up and have the courage to speak up on issues. Because as Jimmy said, you know, they will be front page news. But I think it's a really healthy thing that players are prepared to speak up on issues. So, you know, this one's no different.
And what would be, Paul, without going into specifics, I guess, an example of a medical exemption? So just reading from the document here, for players who do not comply with the policy and do not have an approved medical exemption from the AFL. So there can be players who aren't fully vaxxed playing with an exemption?
Well, it's only basically what lines up with the government exemptions, which I'm sure you're aware is very narrow. It's basically, you know, if you can prove you've had an anaphylactic reaction to it. So it's, you know, it's nearly impossible to prove.
Okay. Well, Paul, it's a crazy time, for want of a better term. It is for so many parts of our community. And as you rightly suggested, the AFL is a subset of that, but it's still a very public subset of it. So we appreciate you coming on, and we'll push ahead for what we hope to be a very successful AFLW season and then into the AFL men's next year. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, guys. Good to chat.
Paul Marsh there, the chief of the AFL Players Association. It's a moving beast, but just repeating, no jab, no play. And the third stage in the three-stage requirement listed here in this document is a first dose by January 21 of next year and fully vaccinated by Feb 18. That's ahead of all the practice matches that will commence in late Feb and early March. And then clubs essentially have the right to terminate a player's contract, but such rights are not to be exercised prior to 18th of May. So between Feb 18 and May 18 is really when, if there are players who don't want to get vaccinated, clubs have to then consult with them and decide, well, what are we doing with you?
Yep. And there's also different requirements for each state. Of course, Western Australia, South Australia and Queensland have a little bit more time to get their vaccination.
More Sports Day after this. We'll take your calls 13 13 32. We've still got Glenn Boss coming up later on the show as well. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're powered by Red Energy, Cairns' most trusted energy retailer, and the new Kia Niro, the electric SUV range, which has now landed. Just heard from the AFL PA boss, Paul Marsh, on the mandate for vaccinations for AFL and AFLW players. Jimmy?
It sounded pretty clear that he supports your choice, but these are the terms and conditions for your choice.
13, 13, 32, if you want to have your say on that choice. Phil's in Melbourne. G'day, Phil.
G'day, guys. Now, just a couple of things that you need to be very mindful of. One is there's not been one court case at this stage, whether it's a class action or an individual, on the legality of the word mandatory. Mandatory and legal are two separate words, and I think we're trying to confuse the two, because this is the angle that Dan Andrews started off with. And the other very important point, the Prime Minister said time and time again, Scott Morrison, it is not mandatory and the federal government will not mandate it. So even though he would like people vaccinated, the federal government has steered clear of it. So I'm just sitting back with bated breath, waiting to see whether there's an impartial judge and not one of the, you know, one of the group, but someone who would be sitting there fairly and seeing whether this is a legal, a total legal judgment, because you're forcing people to do something against their will. That can't be legal.
Okay, thanks for your thoughts, Phil. Interesting stuff. John's in Brisbane. G'day, John.
Yeah, g'day, guys. How are you?
We're good. John.
Good. Just another one, cat amongst the pigeons. What if a player has a medical condition that won't allow him to be vaccinated under his doctor's rules?
Yep.
That so, says, well, no, you can't have it. This will do damage to you.
Yeah, it actually says, it refers to that, John, in the document. Players and football staff that do not comply with the vaccination requirement that apply to them will not be able to attend club or AFL premises during to train or play, absent a medical exemption approved by the AFL.
Yeah, and just on the medical exemptions, using criteria similar to the Victorian authorised worker vaccination yep. mandate.
So that can exist. Thanks for your call, though, John. Good clarification. Darren's in Tyab. G'day, Darren.
Yeah, hey, guys. I do a volunteer with the Selvos on the peninsula.
Nice.
I help him run a food program for the disadvantaged. It is mandatory for us volunteers to be double vaxxed.
Yep.
I mean, I've chose to be double vaxxed anyway. I've been, you know, double vaxxed back in August.
Mm.
But if we can't have a volunteer on site that is not vaccinated. Simple as that.
So you agree with footballers having to?
I think it's just, let's all get on with life. You know, those who can't, they've got a medical reason that they can't be vaccinated, not a problem. Those who don't have a medical reason, want to get on with life, they, I mean, they won't be able to travel. You know, with the footy players, how are they going to get on a plane? All the planes, you've got to be double vaxxed.
No.
How does that work?
Yeah, I mean, firstly, Darren, you're amazing for volunteering with the Salvos. Well done to you. Secondly, I agree in the sense of, I mean, there are going to be people that don't want to get vaccinated. Now, whether you agree with those people or not, in the end, we live in a democratic society. Well, given what's happened in the last 18 months, democratic's got a different spin on it. Anyway, I don't want to get into that. The facts are, whether you like it or not, the facts are, it is going to be very difficult to live your life the way that you have previously and would now in the future like to live your life if you don't get vaccinated. Now, I'm not saying I agree with that or disagree with that. All I'm saying is this is the reality of the world. And I think that, as you heard from Paul earlier, the players are realistic to that. Now, they're going to have a high compliance. We're going to have a high compliance in this state. Australia largely is going to have a high compliance compared to the people that don't want to get vaccinated. But this is the way that the world is moving.
Yeah, and our last caller's name, I just missed, was it Darren?
Darren from Tybe, yep.
Yeah, Darren highlighted a great point. So even if your decision is not to get vaxxed, it's just all the terms and conditions of other things that involve being an AFL player.
Yeah.
So getting on a plane to go play in a different state, actually entering the building to train, like different other things that you associate with being a player or any other worker, but we're talking about football at the moment, how would you actually get your job done?
Be very difficult. From Tyab to Shep. Steve. G'day, Steve.
How we going, guys?
Good, Steve.
I'm just calling on behalf of the hospitality workers, mate. I work tonight and I can't work tomorrow night because I've only had one jab.
Yep.
And then I hear on the news today that Woolies and Coles have got to get double jabs to be working there, but they're still working. There's more people going through supermarkets than pubs.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's absolutely true. Hopefully there'll be as many people going through pubs in the next couple of months. We should all get down and support our locals. But that's going to be the wave of the future. Hospitality workers now have to be double vaccinated as of midnight tonight. If not, you, like Steve, have to wait until you get your second jab. I mean, the interesting thing that we didn't discuss off the back of Paul, Jimmy, was that Paul said we have the option of changing this if the governments change their mind. Now, Daniel Andrews, our Premier, said earlier in the week that, I'm paraphrasing here, that he was answering the question, when would unvaccinated people be able to do what a vaccinated person would do in this state? And he said, well, at the minimum, if you go into the Grand Prix, you're going to have to be double vaxxed. Now, that's April.
Hmm.
And he went on to say, you know, I don't the way out of this isn't not getting vaccinated. So this is all subject to change. But as we've learned in COVID when it started, almost everything is subject to change. But the way it is right now, if you want to play footy, as like you've heard from a lot of our callers, if you want to work in this state, you got to get vaxxed.
I think you get 99% chance say that it's trending towards you'll need to be vaccinated to do anything.
Agree. More Sports Day coming at you right after this. Glenn Boss, not far away. Welcome back to Sports Day. Sam McClure and Jimmy Bartel with you. Glenn Boss, not far away, but not before. News headlines with Tony Tardio.
Good evening. Melbourne is just hours away from lockdown 6 coming to an end. Mildura will also be emerging from lockdown at midnight. 2,232 new COVID cases have been recorded across the state today. 12 people have died. One person has died and another is fighting for life in hospital after a car and a motorbike collided at Avondale Heights this afternoon. Both were riding the bike. The car driver stopped at the scene. Police in Western Australia believe missing 4-year-old girl Cleo Smith was abducted. The WA government has announced a $1 million reward for information that leads to a breakthrough in the case. And some of the world's largest food companies have pledged to halve Australia's food wastage this decade. The Australian Food Pact is a voluntary agreement between retailers, manufacturers, growers and suppliers. More news at 7.
Time now for a sports update for Tyre Power, Australia's biggest independent tyre retailer, keeping you safe on the roads. Tyrepower.com.au.
Welcome back to Sports Day. We've been sucked in again. Headlines today, Jimmy, let me read this one to you. Jack Gunston is back running and on track to return to full fitness for 2022 after injury restricted him to one game this season.
I'm excited. No, it is, because Jack Gunston is a star of the game. Can play back, play forwards, kick bags of 50 for a year. Premiership players, had a fantastic career to this date. He's good for the Hawks.
Are you surprised that given everything the Hawks have tried to do to get back into the draft, that one of their main players who are closer to the end of their career than the start aren't at another club? I mean, Jack Gunston is as good a player at his best, as good a forward of the ball player at his best as you'll find the competition.
But can play back too.
Yeah, could play back, yep.
Beautiful ball user, great set shot on goal.
I know the Pies were interested in him a year ago.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have asked questions, but I think that the only question mark was how would he come back from the back injury? Because if you're going to invest a lot to give up a high draft pick, you want to know whether the player has fully recovered from a back injury, which is pretty serious.
Yeah, I agree with that. And not good news for Import Gold Trip. A serious chance now of being scratched from Saturday's Cox Plate. Failed a vet test this morning. It's one of the unknowns, really, Gold Trip. We've got call sign Mav and State of Rest as the other two unknowns, the internationals. We've got 2 3-year-olds, Nanamo and Cap Devant. And Zaki, the outright favourite. It's going to be a fascinating race. One man that knows all about winning that race is Glenn Boss. He's going to join us next on Sports Day. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy and the new Kia Niro, the electric SUV range, which has now landed. Sam McClure and Jimmy Bartel with you. And it's with great privilege that we are joined live by one of Australia's greatest ever jockeys in Glenn Boss. Glenn, it's always a special weekend, the Cox Plate. I'm sure it holds a special place in your heart, but it's bittersweet, I can only imagine, for you this time round, given what happened to the great Sir Dragon A. Welcome.
Yeah, good evening, guys. How are you all?
We're good.
That's good. Yeah, no, it's, isn't it bittersweet? You know, like a week ago, you're thinking about defending your title and, you know, like that Colt was, Sir Dragon A was trending in the right direction and, you know, you're thinking that you're excited about getting down here and thinking that you might be able to hold another Cox Plate. But unfortunately, the nature of the game that we're in, in sport in general, right, there's injuries that can occur. And unfortunately, it was the biggest injury that a horse can have, and he's going to be sadly missed.
Glenn, Jimmy Bartel here. I love hearing your thoughts on all the big races. You've ridden legends. You've ridden everywhere possible. What makes the Cox Plate so different and so intriguing from a jockey's point of view?
There's a combination of so many things. you know, Moonee Valley is it's a unique piece of real estate, and where it sits, you know, you sit up there and you look down at this Melbourne skyscraper, and you know, the intricate part of that track, it's you know, it's tight, it's turning, it's going down, it's up, it's a real thinking jockey's track, and that's why I love it. It's you know, it really keeps you on your toes, and when you go through the history of this race, and you know, I'm a real history buff, it's sort of like this only champions win this race, and what I'm saying is, generally there's about 50% of the winners of this race are the favourites, so they're very well found. They're the good horses that win. So it's just such an amazing event, and obviously, you know, you get that crazy crowd on the day, and they're on top of you, and you know, 20,000 or 30,000 feels like 120,000 because they're just all on top of you. So it's just a unique atmosphere.
Glenn, Sam and I think we're pretty much experts in racing.
We love
to watch it. And you hear from other racetracks, you know, Flemington, the Clock Tower, different racetracks and races. If you're in this position, you're the best chance to win, or if you're in that position, you're no chance. Anything like that happen at the Valley? When we watch the race, if we see Very Elegant, Animo, Zaki, if they're in a certain position, are we going, tick, that's a win, or put a line through them?
Yeah, when you watch this race, and I've watched hundreds of them, it's generally the last horse off the bridle. And what I mean, it's the one that's travelling, the last one that looks like he's still got a little bit of a kick left. That's generally the winner. And like this year's race is obviously going to be a great rendition. You know, I think there's a few sort of question marks and a few things will be answered on the day. You've obviously got the raging favourite. Coming off what was a... I mean, I know we expect him to win all the time, but it just looked a bit below standard last start in Zaki. And then you have Very Elegant doing exactly the same thing. You've got Gold Trip now. He's got a little bit of an injury cloud over him, I believe. And, you know, and then you've got this wonderful three-year-old, Animo. Like, they get into this race with ridiculously 49.5 and... He looks like the best three-year-old that we've seen actually run in the Cox Plate for quite a while. So it's going to be a fascinating contest.
How do you think the speed will play out in this race? I reckon it's one of the more interesting questions for this Cox Plate in particular, Glenn. Who do you expect to go to the front?
Zaki. I think Captive will be right there from barrier one. He'll kick up in hollow spot. But James knows his horse like nobody else.
Yep.
And he understands that this horse you've actually got to let him use his stride. What I'm saying is you've just got to let him get into his rhythm. And his history will say for this horse in his short history that he's been in Australia, that the faster the run race, and whether that's him making the speed, but the faster and stronger the race is run, he just seems to get better. He's got he must have an amazing heart score and aerobic capacity, this horse. So, you know, he was last start ridden, you know, in a 1-1 position and a tricky affair where they went slow and it's a sprint, and it just never suited him at all.
Bossy, Flemington Carnival and your plans for the next few weeks, what are we keeping an eye on that you're on board?
I'm starting from scratch at the moment. my whole spring got turned on its head a couple of months ago. I should have been down here 2 months ago, unfortunately, but due to the restrictions and the COVID, all that stuff, it got turned on its head. But no, listen, I'm down here for good now, boys. I'm back home, and I'm staying in Melbourne for good now. We considered Melbourne our home, my wife and I, because my kids live here. We're back here for good. Looking far beyond the spring, to be honest.
Okay, well, we're looking forward to seeing you in the spring and what comes of the autumn as well. Hey, Bossy, we had Greg Carpenter on last night. Had a fascinating chat around weights, you know, in a lot of the big races, particularly the Melbourne Cup. We always go back to 03, 04 and 05 with Maccabi Diva, and I just shake my head still that you're on board Maccabi Diva carrying 58 kilos and still able to do what that amazing horse was able to. But since then, no one's really been able to go near carrying any sort of great weight. And we see what the penalty to incentivise is. How hard is it for a horse to carry anything more than 56.5, 57 and run the 3200 better than anyone else?
Yeah, well, what it is, it's relative to what's the horses are down the bottom and what form they're in. And I think this year is going to be a different year. Obviously, not many internationals coming this year. As you've seen, with the Caulfield Cup, obviously the winner's very good, but when you go beyond the winner, they're nice horses, but they're no stars. So we're going to have much the same thing in the Melbourne Cup. Now, Incentivize, listen, he's a star. There's no doubt he's a very good horse, but he's going to meet what I'd consider a near superstar in Spanish Mission on level weights. Now, this horse brings Stradivarius form to Australia,
yep.
Like and tested Stradivarius on several occasions. Now, that horse, if Stradivarius was here, he would be the shortest price favourite we'd ever seen in a Melbourne Cup, and he would win easily. There's no doubt. So the long answer to your question is that I think it's going to be a bit of a top weights race this year, because I think that's where the class is. Horses like Spanish Mission, obviously Incentivize, he's going to be hard to beat again. Very elegant. Don't knock her. She ran amazingly last year. These type of horses, I think, because when you look down the bottom, I just can't see the winner coming from down there, guys.
Bossy, great to have you on. It's great to have you back home where you belong as well. And I'm sure it's been a crazy ride with COVID, as it has been for so many people. We're looking forward to watching you over the next couple of months. Thanks so much for coming on.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks, guys. Thanks for your support.
Glenn Boss there, champion jockey. Obviously coming home a little later than he would have expected. He's got Sharper in race 7. This is on Cox Plate Saturday. All Hallows Eye in race 10 as well. And, of course, would have had Sir Dragonair going for two in a row.
And Bossy, again, touching on it there, there's some question marks on a couple of horses. Call sign Mav is the other one. It's getting vet checked along with Gold Trip.
So two of the internationals who you'd think that, yeah, I mean, these are the unknown. And State of Rest, who, you know, for me, comes with form that always makes your eyes go up, because yeah, I always worry about these ones that we haven't seen. And State of Rest, you know, this Irish galloper who his last start won a grade one Saratoga Derby over, 1,900 metres. He's got a really good turn of foot. And I think Zaki absolutely deserves to be the red hot favourite. But as Bossy said, Cox Plates are weird races.
It was so fascinating how he unpicked it. The last one to let down.
Last one off the bridle.
Usually wins.
One with a little bit more in the tank. Jimmy Bartel is here for the McSpicy range at Macca's. We're going to wrap up Sports Day next and touch on with your latest odds from Bluebet. And Tom Mitchell has just spoken to Channel 9 News. I'm sure he was asked around how he felt being put up in lights, potentially as trade bait. We'll hear from Tom after this.
It's time for a Bluebet odds update. Bet same game multis with Bluebet. Download the apps today. Gamble responsibly.
Yes, the great Duncan McRae joins us from Bluebet. Dunk, welcome. The Manicato and the Cox Plate, what are the numbers doing?
Yeah, good evening, Sam, Jimmy, and all the listeners out there. Well, top of the Bluebet market, let's start with the Manicato Friday night, boys.
Oh, yes.
Soxatels, 440 out to 460. Good money for Lombrado. He's been 6 into 480, ingratiating at 7, Sneaky 5 at 9, and Jonkers also at $9. Let's look at the Cox Plate on Saturday, boys, and Zaki's an easing $3 favourite with the blue bet punters. Very well back the 3-year-old Animo, boys. He's $5 into 4, very elegant 5, and we'll go out to Gold Trip at $12 with Moanga. So, but all the money in the Cox Plate Saturday, boys, Animo the 3-year-old.
Do you like either of the, like any bets in either of those races, Dunk? Because they're both interesting fields when you break them down.
Yeah, well, Animo's the new star on the rise, isn't it, Sam? But Zaki was $1.25 beaten last week. Now you're getting $3.
Yeah.
James McDonald down to ride. Oh, I think there's a bit of a swing back there with J-Mac making the trip down. And Zaki's been taking all before him. Just that one blip on the radar, but I think $3 will tighten up.
Duncan, the Aussies are rated 7 in the world in T20. Do people like him on the punt more so?
Jimmy, yeah, well, they got the T20 game, haven't they, Saturday night. They're $1.70 favourite. Not the best form going in. They lost to India last night. 2-11 South Africa. And we're on the fifth line of betting for $9 to win the T20. So all those games up at bluebet.com.au.
Good on you, Dunk. As always, gamble responsibly. Thanks, and boys. Bet with Bluebet. Duncan McRae there. Hey, interesting stuff. Tom Mitchell on Channel 9 asked about the recent trade period and if his name was put up.
I don't think it was messy. It was probably perceived to be messy from the outside, but, you know, at no point were any of us leaving. So it was just outside noise and fake news, really. We're fully on board, and we're right behind Sam and the coaching staff to see what we can do together.
Oh, Tom!
It's not fake news when
hang
you're...
Hang on!
It's not fake news when you're...
Hang on!
When your president and football director put it on the agenda.
Oh, Tom!
It's not fake news, Tom.
Hey, I wonder... He was on Channel 7 News as well. He's in a black T-shirt.
Ball magnets.
Ah, ball magnets. Yeah. That's the app that he's got, isn't it?
Yeah, sponsored posts.
Very popular. Right. Him and who else is in it? Paddy Cripps?
Toby Green. A couple other AFL players. Why weren't they on the...
Great app. Doing good things.
Where were the battle ropes? Jordan DeGale is doing battle ropes.
You're nasty about this.
Well, what's the best thing we're going to see over summer?
He wasn't just on the battle ropes. He was on the battle ropes standing on a BOSU ball.
Well, I saw the Mackays last night doing chin-ups. Just in the background. So what's going to be the best thing that Mitch...
They were doing chin-ups with chains over their necks. Make it a little bit heavier. You see, that's often referred to as a weight belt, Jimmy.
Yes.
You're lifting a little bit.
What's the great jungle drums going to... What's the best thing Mitch Cleary going to get players to do in the background?
I'll tell you what Mitch has done since he's got to seven. I'll tell you what he's done. He's gone bang. Couple of big stories. Couple of good gets.
I'll tell you what he's done. I know Mitch well.
Sharp.
He's invested in his attire.
A couple of haircuts as well. I reckon he's got into the Channel 7 makeup room and just said, hey, just wanting to sharpen things up a little bit.
It's a tailored...
Couple of new ties.
It's a tailored suit, so it doesn't look like he's wearing his dad's suit anymore.
And I'm tipping a couple of skinnier ties. You know how the fashion went from fat ties to when you were young into skinny ties to when I was young? And then we've gone back. We've got halfway. The fashion is now the skinny fat type.
Yeah, you look good for 42, don't you? I think the next step for him
is... You are older than me.
I'm not. I'm younger than you. Mitch Cleary, the type in. That's the next step I want to see from him.
The tie clip?
Yeah, the little slide across the bit.
Pin. It's a tie clip.
Yeah, so you're older. You know this stuff.
It's a clip.
You're older.
I'm not sure. You don't need the clip. The clip was invented so that if you went to the races and it was windy, the tyre would stay stuck to your shirt. Tyre clip probably not needed for someone inside doing a news cross.
You would know this. You went and saw Bone Crusher live, so it was fantastic.
Always got an answer for everything. Great show tonight, Jimmy.
Yeah.
We'll see you tomorrow for Friday.
Sure.
You are listening to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy, Cairns' most trusted energy retailer, and for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Sam McClure and Jimmy Bartel with you for the best part of the next hour. Coming up, James McDonald, better known as J-Mac, just happened to be the man on board Nature Strip as it was cruising home in the Everest, and now turns his attention to Zaki in the Cox Plate. Whew! It's not a bad 1-2 punch, Jimmy.
Unbelievable.
Interesting to talk to J-Mac about Zaki, who's back in the saddle. Barrier 6 should have...
What do we make of the last
run? The tempo, where, you know, was beaten, has to be said, was beaten fair and squarely.
Absolutely. So that's...
Fairly and squarely.
Squarely and fairly.
Yep, both of them.
I knew what you meant.
And we're just about to talk to Ash Brown, Chief of the AFL Record, social political commentator extraordinaire, of course. And we've got the season review for the Gold Coast Suns. Red light, green light. We've got Jimmy's unders and overs. Looking forward to diving into all of that. But let's get to Ash Brown, who joins us as he always does this time of the week. Ash, welcome.
Hello, good to be with you once again.
Jimmy and I have spent a lot of the first hour talking about the AFL's newly conditioned and appointed vaccination policy. And if you want to break it down into a few words, as they do in movie synopsis, it's no jab, no play.
Yeah, that is in a nutshell. If you're not vaccinated by the 18th of May, you might get your contract torn up. So to me, it's a good policy. It's a sensible policy by the AFL. It takes into account the science. It shows leadership across the community. interesting. I put something up on Twitter and I've had a couple of responses saying, what about grassroots footy? I guess that comes next. And that is also equally important, I think, to the football community, what's going to happen at all the various levels that are drilled down from the AFL. But this is a really good start and a really responsible start towards getting the AFL footy back to how we've known it and loved it for so long.
Mr. Brown, Jimmy Bartel here. I want you to just to put a little bit of a different lens onto it. One of the key points, it looks like it's shifted all the sort of decision-making regarding contracts and how if a player was to say no, it's up to the club's discretion of how much they want to pay them or where they what they shall do with that player.
That's right. So the player's got a bit of thinking to do if they want to go down that path of not getting vaccinated. And the clubs will make the call. So there's all sorts of possibilities in there. Keep them on the list, put them on a different list, pay them 25%. And then after May 18, the big decision about whether to drop them off altogether. I'm pretty confident we're going to get to, I mean, I know Tom McDonald came out and said that he doesn't like the, you know, a mandated vaccine in footy, but even though I believe he's still vaccinated or on the way to being so. I'm going to find it very, very hard. I know we've got one player in the AFLW. I reckon we're going to get huge compliance in the AFL community. If community is going to be 90% plus, 94, 95% they're hoping for, I think AFL is going to smash that level even more.
You highlighted something there, and I'll read it word for word, Sam, just so people are clear.
Yep.
Keep the player on their playing list, meaning player cannot be replaced, and pay the player not less than 25% of for AFLW, their contracted salary for AFL, 25% of the CBA minimum base salary. So we always do the worst case scenario. So we're just using his name because we know he's one of the highest paid players in the game. If Dustin Martin said, I'm not getting vaxxed and I'm done, do you think he would accept if Richmond turned around and said, we're paying you minimum wage? What do you think Ralph Carr would do?
Ralph Carr would make a lot of noise, but the rules are in place. It's interesting there's a group of high-profile players who try to challenge them, how much weight they would have as a collective group. But it sounds like the AFLPA have signed off it as well. And imagine the AFLPA. I'm interested to know whether they take the temperature of the player managers as well as the players because they've come out obviously today and strongly supported the policy. So I would imagine that call me naive, guys. I can't see this situation happening. I know we should talk through all the hypotheticals, but I just can't imagine a high-profile player walking away from all that amount of money.
No, well, I'm not disagreeing with you here, Ash, but one of the highest-paid athletes in the history of the world, Novak Djokovic, is going through this as we speak. So it's not beyond the realms of possibility. Oh, I agree with you. I feel like it's unlikely, but we have to talk through the possibility.
Yeah, and there's been high-profile, certainly Kyrie Irving in the NBA and
yeah.
Kirk Cousins in the NFL is one example I can think of. But I just, yeah, we'll wait to see what happens, won't we? And I guess the proof will be now over the next little while. Some clubs have already come out and said, I think North and St Kilda and Sydney are three clubs have already come out and said 100% of their players are vaccinated. That was like a month ago. So had their first jabs anyway. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. I mean, it makes the return to training, doesn't it? I mean, we talk about off-season media events and the first day back of training gets a lot of attention. It will make it really interesting to see. Will the track watchers be out at every club who's turning up on day one, won't they?
Ash, Sam often refers to you as the social and political commentator as well, so you should have your finger on the pulse. Derby Day, Australian Open, Boxing Day Test, Grand Prix, all the big events coming up. Are we 10,000? Are we 25%? Well, are we playing numbers or percentage game for crowds coming up?
Well, I think it'll be numbers into percentages. And I think the first big test from an AFL lens will be Boxing Day, in the Big Bash, because that's going to use venues that the AFL uses. So that'll be, the tennis is a different example again, but that's over a wide area. But what they do with Marvel Stadium, what they do with the MCG for the Big Bash and the MCG, obviously, for Boxing Day test, that's going to be the leading indicator going forward. I think that'll be, what did we do last year around this time when we were in between lockdowns around Christmas time? I think the Boxing Day test was somewhere between 25 and 50%.
Yeah, that's right.
That sounds about right again. I think that's what it'll be with a slow build-up towards the start of the footy.
Doesn't really fill Victorians with confidence when the night that we're coming out of lockdown, the curfew, which usually starts at or ends at 9 o'clock, is now actually in vogue of that night. So the way I see it is that you can actually go to a pub at 12:01 a.m. tonight, but you can't be walking to the pub at 11:59. I mean, goodness gracious me. If there wasn't a bigger cluster, and I just will avoid the next word, than we have ever seen, people lose all faith. How are we supposed to know how many we're having in the Boxing Day test if we can't? If we have to make special dispensation for hospitality workers to leave their home to get to... Anyway, it just beggars belief sometimes. Ash, Mitch Cleary's story about Jordan DeGoey this week. I love it as a journo, as far as the get. Great TV pictures. But as you can see from someone like Jimmy, and I think he shares with a lot of people, how newsworthy is it? And I just kind of feel like Jordan's one of these players where, you know, you should have been doing this 5 years ago.
Well, that's the newsworthy side of it.
That's true.
The combination of it's Jordan DeGoey, for whom conditioning has always been a question mark. I think the fact he plays for Collingwood probably comes into it as well. And it's the footy. If you can find the foot, that's like the newspapers know you've worked in newsrooms, Sam. If you can find the footy angle for anything, 365 days a year,
yes,
you work on it. And don't take these things too seriously. There'll be players at every club who are flying. I mean, Hawthorn put out a release today saying that Jack Gunson's flying. So it's all that bit of good news everyone looks for this time of year. But I think we've got a bit of vision. There's the American angle, the fact that, you know, so many of us can't travel at the moment, but we found a way to get to America. The question everyone's asking is how the hell is he going to get home? But that's all sorts of little things. And a very competitive newsroom at Channel 7, as we discussed last week between Mitch Cleary and Tom Brown.
Oh, yeah, town war is going along beautifully. And what do you make of Ben Simmons, Ash?
Yeah, it's been fascinating. I think, we're very protective of our international superstars in this country, but I really thought the mood has shifted.
It has.
On Ben Simmons. I thought it started when he didn't play the Olympics.
Yep.
And then seen socialising and, you know, supposedly to work on his game, but then I think he was spotted at Wimbledon or somewhere with his partner and having a grand old time. And I think the mood's really, really shifted. Disappointment that, you know, he might have helped the Boomers actually make the gold medal game had he been playing. Mm. And then, you know, not on and seem to be trying to get out of a contract, in a very lucrative contract, very fortunate to be making the money he is, to be trying to get out of drills and that sort of thing. Not a lot of sympathy for Ben. It's disappointing because, Jerry Whateley said this, we want to love him. We really want to love an Australian who's dominated the NBA. He should be the number one Australian international sporting star, and he's doing a lot to lose our respect at the moment. Some of the reporting out of America, if you've had time, Ramona Shelbourne's report on ESPN.com about Ben Simmons, which included talking to Kevin Gorgian about his school days. So she's really done her homework. It was a really good piece of reporting. And if you love Ben Simmons or interested in Ben Simmons, I can't commend that piece highly enough on ESPN.com.
Ash, I love my cricket. I'll watch any match of cricket. T20 World Cup coming up. Any interest for you, and how much cut through will we get considering T20?
I'm with Sam on this one. I don't.
It's just, snooze fest.
For me, I'm not a massive cricket fan, but for me, in Ashes summer, the cricket season will start with the first ball of the Ashes test. And I didn't even realise they were playing until a couple of days ago. I thought they were playing it in Australia next year, but maybe I didn't realise it was an annual event and whatever it is. But there's too much cricket. And I think T20 personally is a club team-based event. I'm not sure it works as an international concept.
You know what T20 cricket has become?
What?
It's become like franchise movies. Yeah. They literally just exist with no storyline and no character development, just to do one thing.
Oh.
Make cash.
Okay, you two gentlemen can whip down to St Kilda. Someone's doing a hammy stretch.
No, I'm not saying you don't have to watch it.
No, I'm just saying,
it's boring.
Lots of
people go watch the Avengers as well. It doesn't make them good films.
They are good films.
They're not. But
money says they are.
Yeah, for me, snooze fest.
Nah, hammy stretches in October from a player
looking
who's
to,
flying.
Looking forward to talking to Pat Cummins, though, tomorrow on the show. Who's going to join us the tournament opener against South Africa? He will make it fun and interesting. Ash, great to have you on. No jab, no play. I cannot wait to see just how this unfolds the next few days of reactions. There's going to be plenty of columns. There's going to be plenty of fodder on radio. It's one of those times, Ash, where you and I and lovers and Jimmy and lovers of the media just like to sit back and watch the melting pot.
Yeah, it's going to be to see whether I'll be interested to see whether it takes an extreme opinion one way or the other. So yeah, this will be good fun.
Ash, great to have you on. Enjoy the weekend.
Thanks, guys.
Ash Brown, chief of the AFL record. More Sports Day after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy and for Wilson Homes. Time for the Gold Coast season review. They finish 16th with 7 wins and 15 losses. The off-season, they added Marbior Chol from the Tigers. They lost Will Brody to the Fremantle Dockers. So not a whole lot of change given the mass exodus of players and influx of players, Jimmy, that we used to at the Gold Coast Suns, which I think in itself is an interesting point. Stabilising their list a little bit. Clearly, they think that they're closer to getting the list that they want to climb up the ladder. And they have the number 3 pick in the draft, which will help.
I'll make a slight disagreement with you.
Sure.
I just think it's the cycle of their contracted players, the reason.
Yeah, that's true. And a lot of clubs didn't do as much change because of TPP results. And you're right, they've got more contracted players. But
correct.
But their list is probably at a point where they feel like they're building the nucleus more than they ever have under Stuart Jew.
Well, I think for this group with King, Rankin, Lukosius, Rao, that grouping, so that draft and a draft either side, I think they need to see rapid improvement for the players to have belief.
Well, they need to see rapid improvement from those players you just mentioned, apart from King.
Correct, because if they all come through together, then you stay.
Yeah.
Because you can see Brendan Bolton, green shoots, you can see whatever it may be. But Marby Orchol will actually be a very handy in for him.
I agree. He's 24, so he's got... He could be a 100-game player for them comfortably.
Correct.
And he's going to play most weeks. I would say that he's a starting 15 player for them when he's not injured.
Correct.
And he really helps out. You know, you add him into the team and you add Witts, who didn't play a lot of the year. I think there's positivity for the Gold Coast Suns. However, I've sat in this chair for the last few years and talked about the positivity of the Suns, and they keep disappointing. Let's play this game.
Green light.
Red light, green light. That voice still freaks me out every time I hear it.
It's frightening.
Red light.
Oh, it's going to give me chills. Who's your green light? Who's your positive of the year?
Took Miller.
Got
it. Yeah, thank you. Tuke.
Yeah, Tuke Miller. Absolutely. Brained him. Showed a level consistency. I guess some determination and fight and will. Mm. Whenever you watch him play, you go, this guy cares. And I'm not saying other players don't, but it is so reflective.
It's visceral, isn't it, when
correct.
You watch him?
Yep. Correct. And I love that about him. And he does have that sort of get on the bus, I'll take you there sort
yeah,
of feeling
does.
About him.
Which a lot of guys are born with, and you can tell from their first season that they're like that. He's actually wasn't like that for a few years in the comp.
Well,
he just decided he was going to be like it. It was quite interesting.
Well, he had a lot of energy, super fit, but I think now that he's grown into his AFL man's
he's
body.
He's winning ball now, isn't he? He's a bit of a brute.
Yeah, he understands what he can do at an AFL level.
Yeah.
So
there's your green light.
And our...
Red light!
Yeah, Matt Rao.
Oh, hang on.
Well, red light. So
hang on.
I know you've lived...
The poor kid was injured again.
Correct.
And then came back underdone.
Correct.
Hadn't had the preseason that
correct.
He needed to. And couldn't find the footy that he wanted to.
Correct.
Yeah, that's a nasty red light. That's a Squid Games red light, that is.
No, that is an absolute red light.
No, I'm not happy with that.
I'm
can't
actually,
accept that.
That's a positive red light because, unlike you...
A positive red light.
No, because the whole...
So it's one that you can run through, is it?
No, because you're thinking red light, you've got to smash a player who's been poor. My red light is that his season never got going, so he's been stopped at the lights because he's been injured.
Okay.
See?
A nice red light.
Matt Rao was my red light. He gets fully fit. You had him with, obviously, Miller and the other midfield brigade that they've potentially got.
Anderson, yeah.
And so on and so forth. Chol and Witts.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Gary
Ellis.
I feel like your Rows, your Witts, your Chols. All that sort of stuff. So he's the red light.
Okay.
So,
3 key questions heading into the 2022 season. Well, this is a good one. I like this. How will Alistair Clarkson's availability shape the narrative around the year?
Well, you're a narrative shaper.
Not sure I'm there yet.
No, but...
I think with every... If they start the year poorly... Well, let's go the halfway mark. If they're 11 games in and they're any less than 5 wins, they're under the pump.
I like you're going where I was going, but I was going to do after 6 rounds.
Okay, yeah. Give me 6.
Because we move quicker.
Give me 6. If they're 2-4.
If they're 1-5.
Yeah, 1-5 is
a lock. Yeah, it's like...
1-5 is alarm bells.
1-5.
2-4 is like, too work to do. 3-3 is a big tick.
1-5, you're ringing every real estate agent on the Gold Coast to see if he's checked anything out.
Second question. What happens with Ben King at the end of the year? Out of contract.
Hopefully he re-signs to the Gold Coast.
For a big deal.
for a beard.
A big old sort of Dustin Martin, Christian Petrarca, and Brody Grundy 7-year deal.
With a theme park thrown in.
He might be better than Max. I'm just saying. And third question, is Matt Rowe going to recapture his early career form?
Absolutely.
So back to being best on grounds?
No, but he'd be back to being...
Well, that was his early career form.
Yeah, that was as good as it gets. It was 3 games.
The best start to an AFL career, I think, ever.
John Coleman had a pretty good start, too. He's...
A bit before my time.
Yeah.
You're well-versed to talk about it during that
well, time. Well, I respect the history of the game, and I get to know it.
You said throwing it back.
Yes. So, I think he certainly does. I think he's shown through his underage football in his first year, he's a very driven individual. Gets the high shorts up, sunscreen on, and away he goes.
Unders, overs.
I'm a bit of self-praise. I think I've nailed these lines in the first 2 games. The Gold Coasting Suns won 7 wins last year. I've given you a line. They won 7 wins.
Okay.
Yep, so just to be clear.
Sure. Yep.
So they take every win they can get in their history. So I've given it to them twice. 8.5 wins, under or over.
It's a great line.
So 8 you lose.
I think.
8 is
I
under.
I think over.
You reckon they're going to win 9 games?
Yeah, I think they actually would have won 9 games this year had Wits stayed fit. Personally.
All right. Dot point B. If they win 9, is it Stewie Jew, no Alistair Clarkson?
I need to understand more of the context of the year.
Yeah, it's fair.
Injuries, where other teams finish, all that sort of stuff.
Very well done. Ben King, 47 goals last year.
47?
From probably about 12 entries they had for the entire year. I'm giving it a line 50.5. So 51 is over.
Yeah.
I'm gonna, 50 is under.
I'm saying unders.
Yeah, that's your first under, I reckon you've gone.
No, I reckon it's my second. I'm going unders. Yeah, okay. I still think he'll kick 40s, but I think anything over 50 for a team that's not playing finals is quite a lot.
Well, we know Miller polled well because he played a great season.
Tuke.
Matt Rowe.
Yes.
We mentioned his first 3 games were 3 Brownlow votes in 2020. Only played 12 games last year. Under, over 10.5 votes. Line setter.
So
you reckon he'll get 11 or more?
Yes. Yep.
Well, it sort of goes hand in hand. If you think they're going to win 9 games,
yeah,
he's probably going to have a big say in them.
Yep. Which makes me nervous about my Ben King underspent.
Okay. No, it's good because that means they finally share the goals.
Yeah,
around.
Maybe Marbior kicks a few. And Rankin goes forward and Rankin and
some sort of
Lukosius if he decides to.
Well, he's been moved forward.
Yeah. Still a bit down on Lukosius.
I know.
I know. You're very positive. More Sports Day. That was a Gold Coast Suns season review. More Sports Day after this.
Nature Strip at the 300 metres, 2 lengths clear from his old sparring partner Eduardo giving chase. It's Nature Strip in front of Eduardo. The Sikh legends rattling home. Nature Strip in front of Eduardo. Nature Strip kept going. Eduardo. Mars Crusaders jumping out of the ground. Just missed. Nature Strip clings on. He's king of the mountain this time.
How good is that? I still get tingles up my spine when I listen to that.
I was still nervous for Masked Crusader, wasn't it? And I know Nature Strip wins.
I think you were still thinking Masked Crusader and the replay might have got up, but the man on board, the missile that was and is Nature Strip, just happens to be on the favourite coming up this weekend, Zaki, in one of the biggest races in Australia in the Cox Plate. James McDonald, better known as J-Mac, joins us on Sports Day. Welcome, James.
Hey guys, how are you?
We're really good. Now, before we get to Zaki, can I just ask you one question? When you're on Nature Strip and Nature Strip decides to turn up like it did, what's the feeling when you're on board?
Oh, he's pretty good. He's a wrecking ball when he does turn up. He's obviously there's no hard luck stories with him. He's pretty self-explanatory. He'll be in the first two, and if he's good enough to win, he's there to win. And if there's a better horse on the day, well, then there is. But more times than not, luckily, he's the best horse in the race, and he's got a beautiful racing style that gets horses out of comfort zones pretty early in races, and he sustains a great gallop. So he's a pleasure to be a part of. Very proud of him.
I think people forget, James, that Nature Strip early days actually had a lot of trouble settling in races, and quite a few times getting beaten on the line when it would spend a few too many tickets early. How did he change that?
Oh, it probably it's just maturity as well as teaching the horse as well. But to be fair, he was going quick. He still goes quick, but he's harnessing probably a half a length which is helping the last 100 metres. And he wasn't getting beaten far when he was running so hard and having nothing left. So,
yeah.
He just had to tinker with a few things. We had to sacrifice a few races early doors, but now it's paying dividends, and now he's probably, if not, the world's best sprinter. So it's good to be a part of him.
You were tucked in on the rail there, going nicely, and as we said just before on the intro, Mars Crusader just weaved its way through the field. I know you still won, but did you realise how close it was on the back of you there?
Yeah, of course I did. I knew he was coming. He's it was a brilliant ride by Tommy, and he got close, but lucky enough, we got the photo, which is you make your own luck in this game, and Nate strip up on speed, did it the tough way, and still held on, so all the credit has to go to him. And but yeah, no, the field was coming quick, and I could definitely hear them coming.
as we mentioned, Nature Strip, established star, Zaki, rising star, if not already there. We've got to ask the obvious question: what happened to it last time?
Well, I'm not too sure, but hopefully he rectifies that and comes, you know, is competitive in the Cox Plate, because if he brings his A game, he's obviously the one horse to beat, albeit strong field, small but strong, but he's in with a good chance.
Well, there's horses that really appreciate the Moonee Valley track, the different shape, and you know, the way they come off that last bend. Does that actually make things better for Zaki, as you mentioned, with the smaller field and the different shape track?
Yeah, for sure. I'd probably prefer a bigger field, to be honest with you, but he likes tempo, B, he didn't like the circumference of shape of Caulfield, and he didn't like the hard track. So there's three things that probably hopefully will work in his favour this time round and reverse the results. But he needs to lift a little bit, but I'm sure a bit like Nate Strip, if he gets the little things right, he'll be fighting out the finish, that's for sure.
Now, James, when my co-host Jimmy was winning flags for Geelong, I'm sure the night before a game he was going to bed with a pen and a pad, writing down notes on opposition players. Now, I'm not sure what it's like for a jockey. You've got 2 3-year-olds in Animo and Captivant, and then you've got three horses that we haven't actually seen in Australia before. So, how does that change your preparation with a little bit of the unknown?
Not a lot, to be honest with you. I've ridden half the field, to be honest. I've ridden Captivant, the Group 1 winner, to a Group 1 success. I've ridden Very Elegant, Animo, Mwanga, and now Zaki. So I've got a good handle on all the opposition, to be fair. And I think I'm confident I'm on the right horse, for sure.
People are very confident about Animo because it's probably got the least amount of warts or coming into this race. Of course, Very Elegant. You know, not winning its way into this race. Zaki, of course, last start. Why the big raps on Animo?
Oh, he's just untapped, to be fair. He's a young horse. He's got a brilliant record. He's never far away. But like every horse in the race, they've all got a negative about them. And he's got it. He's the same. It's whether he gets 2,000 metres strongly against older horses. I know the 3-year-olds have got a great record in the race, but if you're giving Animo a chance, you've got to give Captivant a chance. And whether they have got the right credentials to win a Cox Plate, I'm not too sure, because it's the first time they're stepping out to 2,000 metres, and it's a big difference, a mile to 2,000. So we'll see how they go.
Where's the speed going to come from in the race, do you think, James?
It looks the Kiwi, but a lot of them will hold the spot. They're pretty versatile sort of horses, so the Kiwi looks the leader there.
And also, any other rides for you that we should be keeping an eye on? Because, like we said, you can steer anything home, and a lot of people listening that have the pen and paper out ready to mark down anything you're on.
Yeah, no, I've got some nice rides. I think I've got six rides on the day. So obviously Zaki, I'm hoping, is my best, but Rhododendra is a good ride, and same with Generation. So they're probably the three that I'd probably identify.
And James, as we let you go, nutrition the night before a big race, and even the morning of, what do you eat and what can you eat?
Not much. It's pretty self-explanatory, to be fair. It's probably a bit like everyone else, but we're just probably losing a little bit of weight, but you still have to refuel, so to speak. But yeah, it'd be a, just a really, really light meal night before, and then maybe a banana or something in the mornings. But it's all in moderation. It's just the size of the portions. It's not what you eat, but the size of them, what we put in our mouth.
James, you sound pretty calm. Jimmy and I are nervous for you. We can't wait to see Zaki in the Cox Plate crossing the line first and seeing you up there on the podium. Good luck. You're an absolute star. You're on a couple of star horses as well recently, and we look forward to watching more of you in the spring.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on.
James McDonald there, the jockey of Zaki, was on board Nature Strip in the Everest as well. More Sports Day coming up after this.
She's back, not pulled from the lineup yet. This week's weather outlook is thanks to Farmers Business Network. Grow your business as an FBN community builder. Let's start in Mildura, where it's summer all year round. And this weekend is no different. Balmy, top of 30 degrees tomorrow, dropping down to the mid-20s there on after. If you're in the Wang, you'll have a nice 26 and sunny top tomorrow. Showers expected across the weekend. To Horsham, where we see a similar story, 24 tomorrow. Rain expected to fall the days after that. And to round us out, we'll check in on the border, where it's mostly sunny, 26 tomorrow in Albury, dropping down to the low 20s for the rest of the weekend. That was a weather outlook thanks to Farmers Business Network. Become a Farmer Business Network community builder and introduce the future of farming to your community.
Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy and for Wilson Homes. Earlier tonight, Jimmy and I caught up with AFLPA boss Paul Marsh. The COVID-19 vaccination policy for AFL and AFLW players has been released. Paul had his take.
Yeah, good to chat, guys.
Paul, this is pretty significant, is it not?
Well, it's a pretty significant issue, and you know, it's complex and it's difficult, and we've spent a little while working through it with the AFL, but I think where we've landed is a fair situation now, our position for the playing group, given the circumstances that we're dealing with.
Paul, was there pressure to get one out? We saw other sports, they've come out recently in the last week or so. We even spoke to Todd Greenberg, who represents another big players' union as well. Was there any public pressure? I know you don't look at that, but was there pressure to get something out?
A bit coming from you the other day, wasn't there, Jim? Everyone wants a bit of certainty at the moment, and I think, you know, what we've been able to build into this policy is, you know, some key dates depending on where each of the states are at. So clearly at the moment in Victoria, we've got AFLW players who are in their pre-season. We've got AFL players who are wanting to get into the clubs. We need to give them some certainty. We've got players around the country in similar positions, but in other states, you know, at the moment, there's really no COVID. So we've been able to push back dates for first and second doses in the non-Victorian states, which we think is a really pragmatic outcome. We've also built in a clause here that if the government positions change, we have an ability to review this policy. So, you know, whilst at the moment every player, the expectation is that they'll get vaccinated by these dates, if things change, you know, we can change with it.
So on that, Paul, and you know, the ramifications for players that don't get vaccinated, I think are pretty extreme, and I'm not saying that in a good or bad sense. They can exercise any rights that the club may have to terminate a player's playing contract, but such rights are not to be exercised prior to the 18th of May. So that's really the cutoff date for when things can kick in. Given how full-on some of these sections of the contract around remuneration are you confident that compliance is going to be quite high? I mean, of course, you wouldn't have been able to get all 800 players on the phone in the last few weeks, but I can only gauge from this that the PA's got a fairly good sense that the vast majority of players are going to get vaxxed.
Yeah, I mean, we've met with all playing groups, male and female, over the last month or so. We've got a very good sense of it. I mean, I don't think I'd be stating this too highly to say that we're looking at probably 99% plus players that will be vaccinated. So, practically, this is not a huge issue for the collective, but for the individuals that are, working through these issues at the moment, clearly it's a big issue. And I think, we've had to negotiate that with the AFL. I think we've landed in a fair position for all sides, but, you know, the players still have an opportunity to work through their own individual circumstances, which, you know, we continue to discuss with them.
I agree with all that, Paul, and as we read through it makes a lot of sense, and we make a lot of assumptions that pretty much everyone will take up, you know, the double vax. It says one line, clubs will determine the action to be taken with respect to, you know, payments, employment status. So is that putting it that each club can make their own decision, or will the players' union and the AFL still have an involvement if a player decides not to be double vaxxed?
Well, I think, you know, what we've put in place here is that every player will receive a payment of a minimum of 25% for the AFLW players, their contract. For the AFL male players, 25% of the minimum. But there's an opportunity for the club and the player then to negotiate that. And there'll be different circumstances. I mean, some players might be on multi-year contracts, and clubs may want to keep them on their list and pay them at, you know, at full-toed odds. They're all the things that will be worked through. You know, clearly from a legal perspective, without going too far down that path, you know, we've taken advice here, and the player's position is not a particularly strong one. So, you know, I think, as I said, we've gone through what we think is a pragmatic outcome. The industry is supportive. You know, we are an industry, I think, that does support our people well. So I think, you know, there's an understanding here that there wouldn't be a player in the competition who doesn't want to play, and there are some circumstances here that are making it difficult for players to get vaccinated. So I think we're all doing our best to look after those players.
The legal issue that you just mentioned about the players not being in a strong position, I think that's a fascinating one for so many of our listeners, Paul. I mean, we can't use players' names, obviously, because that would be unfair. But if player XYZ, who's on a five-year deal and very well remunerated comparative to his teammates, decides, well, actually, I don't want to get vaccinated, and when I signed this multi-year deal with my club, there was nothing in the contract about this. It would be very interesting for a lawyer on his behalf to argue that case, I would think.
Yeah, and look, I don't want to get too much into the detail, and this isn't just a football issue. This is, you know, any worker in the current environment. It's a consideration here that we've worked through with the AFL in developing the policy.
And do you feel like this is just another example of footballers, whether they want to be or not, have to be, Jimmy, and you've been through this,
yep,
they have to be at the forefront of this in social issues. Now, whether that's drink driving, whether that's drug use, whether it's some sort of other social issue.
Well, Tom McDonald's comments led the news. So that just proves that,
yeah,
that their opinion gets, you know, flows down.
But I mean, yeah, but so the governments, both federally Liberal government and the Labor government here in this state, have been very, very strong, as many other degrees of politics have been, on we've got to get vaxxed. So I think that puts Paul, the AFL, and, you know, consequently its players in that box, that whether they want to be or not, they kind of have to be industry leaders in this.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably a burden that that, you know, all high-profile people do carry. And I think our guys and girls carry that really well. You know, there are times where they can be a bit of a lightning rod, but, you know, we've got to accept that and move on. And, you know, this issue, as I said, it's been a complex one. And, you know, we're in a position now because of government directions, both in Victoria and the country, where, you know, there's really no choice on this one. But I think, you know, if I go back to the point I made before about the number of players that have willingly got vaccinated here, you know, we're well ahead of, you know, what we're seeing in community at the moment. So I'm really proud of what the our members have done on this particular topic. And, you know, we're certainly supportive of trying to get as many of the players vaccinated as possible.
Paul, your organisation does, as you said, it supports its players brilliantly. Have you had much consultation with the AFLW women's player who's decided not to be vaxxed and really is foregoing her AFLW career in that way?
Yeah, you know, Jimmy, we don't tend to talk about individual circumstances, but, you know, what I would say is that, you know, we're aware of players from around the competition. We've had lots of conversations with individual players, and, you know, we'll continue to support, you know, any player in this position.
Do you think, like, we saw Tom McDonald that Jimmy mentioned a couple of nights, Paul, and you would have seen those comments. He's double vaxxed, but he thinks it's wrong to mandate. Do you get a sense that there are more of those types in the amongst your constituents?
Yeah, I mean, like any issue, AFL players are just a subset of the community. So, you know, you go to a dinner party, which, you know, hopefully we can do from tomorrow.
Touch wood, yeah.
You'll probably get, you know, 10 people sitting around a table, and there'll be two or three that will have that view. So our players are no different in that sense. And, you know, I think it's really healthy that we have players that are willing to speak up and have the courage to speak up on issues, because as Jimmy said, you know, they will be front page news, but I think it's a really healthy thing that players are prepared to speak up on issues. So, you know, this one's no different.
And what would be, Paul, without going into specifics, I guess, an example of a medical exemption? So just reading from the document here, for players who do not comply with the policy and do not have an approved medical exemption from the AFL. So, read from that there can be players who aren't fully vaxxed playing with an exemption?
Well, it's only basically what lines up with the government exemptions, which I'm sure you're aware is very narrow. It's basically, if you can prove you've had an anaphylactic reaction to it. So it's nearly impossible to prove.
Okay. Well, Paul, it's a crazy time, for want of a better term. It is for so many parts of our community. And as you rightly suggested, the AFL is a subset of that, but it's still a very public subset of it. So we appreciate you coming on, and we'll push ahead for what we hope to be a very successful AFLW season and then into the AFL men's next year. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, guys. Good to chat.
Paul Marsh there, the chief of the AFL Players Association. It's a moving beast, but just repeating, no jab, no play. And the third stage in the three-stage requirement listed here in this document is a first dose by January 21 of next year and fully vaccinated by Feb 18. That's ahead of all the practice matches that will commence in late Feb and early March. And then clubs essentially have the right to terminate a player's contract, but such rights are not to be exercised prior to 18th of May. So between Feb 18 and May 18 is really when, if there are players who don't want to get vaccinated, clubs have to then consult with them and decide, well, what are we doing with you?
Yep. And there's also different requirements for each state. Of course, Western Australia, South Australia and Queensland have a little bit more time to get their vaccination.
More Sports Day after this. We'll take your calls 13 13 32. We've still got Glenn Boss coming up later on the show as well. Interesting stuff there from Paul Marsh. Gave you a couple of jabs as well, Jimmy, which I noticed. We'll talk about that at another time. In fact, we might talk about it tomorrow. It's Thursday night. We're coming out of lockdown. It's 8 o'clock. We're nearly there. Enjoy your Thursday. We'll see you tomorrow.